Welcome to Michelle Speaks. I am your host, Michelle Lawrence. It's the middle of the day and the middle of the week, but you've tuned in to the right show to get you over the hump. We will have riveting conversations about what I call the four W's: worth, wellness, wisdom, and wealth. So let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in His sight. Good afternoon, 860 AM listeners. This is your host, Michelle Lawrence. I am excited to have another hour with you to discuss one of the four W's: worth, wellness, wisdom, and wealth. Every show gets started, as it should, with acknowledgement to the one who made it all possible, and that is with scripture. And today's scripture comes from Isaiah, the 43rd chapter, the 1st through the 5th verse, and I'm going to read the NIV version today. But now, this is what the Lord says: He who created you, Jacob, He who formed you, Israel, do not fear, for I have redeemed you. I have summoned you by name. You are mine. When you pass through the waters, I will be with you. And when you pass through the rivers, they will not sweep over you. When you walk through the fire, you will not be burned. The flames will not set you ablaze. For I am the Lord your God, the Holy One of Israel, your Savior. I give Egypt for your ransom. Cush and Seba is in your stead. Since you are precious and honored in my sight, and because I love you, I will give people in exchange for you, nations in exchange for your life. Do not be afraid, for I am with you. I will bring your children from the east and gather you from the west. I've just read for you Isaiah, the 43rd chapter, the 1st through the 5th verse. May the Lord add a blessing to the reading and hearing of His word. There are two important messages in this passage for me. One is understanding we will go through tumultuous times, but our obstacles are not bigger than our God. The word clearly states, when you go through the water and the fire, I am with you. Neither of these elements will overtake you, because I am your God. I therefore ask you to accept challenges as par for the course. In fact, when the water rises, change your mindset, and rather than fear the swell, begin looking forward to it. Like surfers, embrace the bigger the wave, the bigger and better the experience. The bigger the wave, the bigger and better the thrill. The bigger the wave, the more skill that's required from me to surf and ride the wave. The bigger the wave, the more courage I need to get back out there and do it all over again. I've lived long enough to have experienced God in the same way as surfers have. I understand that the bigger the challenge, the more I have to pray. The bigger the problem, the more I have to step out on faith. The bigger the issue, the more I've learned to have patience and wait on Him. He is bigger than anything I'm going to encounter. But like the surfer, I now start looking forward, that as the swell rises, so will I, and I'll learn to look forward to them and ride through them, knowing that He is with me always. And because He is with me, sometimes the waves might crash, sometimes things may fall, but eventually it's going to turn around. And speaking of turning around, we will now hear It's Turning Around by Fashawn Mitchell.
Sometimes discouraged, but not defeated, cast down, but not destroyed. There are times I don't understand, but I believe it's turning around for me. trouble and disappointment. There are times I felt so alone. Some of my friends, they let me down, but I still believe it's turning around for me, around for me,
around for me, around for me.
It's turning around,
it's turning around for me.
'Cause I can see the breaking,
I can see the breaking of day. God is making a way. Change is coming for me.
If I stay strong,
if I stand strong and believe,
there's no reason to doubt.
Reason to doubt.
I know He's working.
I know He's working it out.
And it's turning around.
It's turning
the good news. It won't always be like this. The Lord will perfect that concerning me, and sooner or later turn in my favor.
Sooner or later.
We have just heard It's Turning Around for Me by Vashawn Mitchell. And how appropriate is that song for today? It's Wild Card Wednesday because it's the fifth Wednesday of the month. And I have a wild card guest today, you guys. You've probably already seen it on all of the social media. He is my pastor. He is my friend. And he is the president of OIC. Please welcome Dr. Kevin R. Johnson.
Good afternoon, everybody.
So glad to have you back. It was interesting because we actually planned to have you on a little bit earlier and
right.
ended up pushing it back deliberately because
right.
I was just believing
and
claiming some things. But that's the second half of the segment. We are going to get started. You know, this song, Turning It Around, we won't do it on the air, but we know what it means.
Right.
But the truth of the matter is there are things we're going to go through,
right?
Just like the scripture said, we're going to walk through the river, but know that the water's not going to rise. We're going to walk through fire, but it's not going to scorch us. But in the thick of it,
right.
we're looking at the swells going, I don't know, Jesus.
Right.
It's growing awfully big. And as we are observing it, sometimes we take our eyes off of Him.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result of that, yeah, it feels like everything is falling apart when, in fact, it's just that preparation for things to turn around. And so, speaking of turning around, I don't even know where to begin with the turnarounds. I was just looking at social media and, you
right.
know, the whole revamping and renovating even of the building of OIC. So you've been president of OIC for greater than almost 2 to 3 years now, right?
Yeah, it's been 2 years and since January 2015, so we're moving along quite well.
Yeah, and so I know that there's a distinct difference from when you got there.
Right.
To, you know, today. And so share with the listeners, what did you do, right? Because there's a process.
Right.
It just didn't, you didn't go in there and turn on the lights like I just
right.
did to, you know,
right.
make it brighter. But there were some steps that you took to turn around OIC. Share with the listeners what those were.
Well, first of all, as I share with people, you can have a vision,
mm-hmm.
but a vision means nothing unless you have people who are there.
Mm-hmm.
And well before I arrived there at Philadelphia OIC, an outstanding board. I cannot
mm-hmm.
thank the board enough, particularly the board chair, Atif Bostic.
Mm-hmm.
I think Atif assessed my type of leadership style, which I'm a visionary.
Mm-hmm.
And he and the board have allowed for me to exercise my strongest gift. And with that, I'm a dreamer. And so I think big. I don't think small. And when we walked in there, I walked in there with the mindset that we wanted to restore OIC and help take it to the next level. Secondly, when I walked into OIC, the board had already done this. And again, I'm giving them credit because in order to kind of take a plane off, you have to have a good runway.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was really no executive staff there.
Right.
So I had the privilege of selecting and bringing in my own team,
mm-hmm.
which was very important because sometimes as a manager and as a leader, as a president, when you come into an organization, there are already people who are there.
Right.
And you have to try to win them open. There's nothing wrong with that. But when you can come in with a clean slate, then you can bring in the people who will really who believe in your vision, who believe in you, and who will help you take the organization to the next level. And then thirdly, it was making sure, trying to reassure the staff who were there, letting them know, look, you know, we are all here on the same team. We have the same mission, that is to help people help themselves. And when you think about OIC, it's been around since 1964,
mm-hmm.
has a great brand, great legacy. All that really needed to happen was just a new vision. And so the energy, the excitement was there. We started to build the partnerships with the business community. They really started to come on board with our different sponsors from Wells Fargo to PICO Comcast, you name it. They all came on board. The convention center has been a major stabling block for us because they give us at least close to about $900,000 a year. And so when you put all those pieces together, it's just a matter of just starting to think about the vision and where you want to take the organization. And for me, our mission is to help people help themselves, but also to eliminate poverty, unemployment, and illiteracy. And so for me, we had to look at what programs do we currently have and are they helping to address that mission? And when we looked at the programs that we have, which are great, hospitality, but when you look at a person who only makes about $11 an hour, that's less than $23,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
That's not really doing something about the poverty rate or getting people out of poverty. So now we've started to expand into other areas like banking. We're moving into construction, energy jobs. And those are more high-paying jobs where people can really sustain themselves but also take care of their families.
So you've just said a lot, but you've also done a lot. One of the things I will pull out that as your part of your first point is you talked about people, but you also talked about culture. And kudos to the board, right?
Yes, kudos to the board.
To the board. They've done a great job,
right.
And they were good even in the terms of being able to identify a great CEO in you.
So
being able to do that and then providing the runway, as you described, of being able to hire the right people.
Right.
And so if you're listening out there, whether you're an entrepreneur or a leader, the first thing you do is assess, because that's what
I heard. Assess. That's right.
You go in and assess. Right. And while he reports to a board,
right,
that's his immediate supervisor, whoever you're reporting to, you've got to make clear the vision and the plan that you have.
Right.
And then gain the commitment of those above you.
Yes.
Because that's also what I heard you say.
Yes.
You got commitment, buy-in. The board said, great, you know, here's the runway.
Right.
And then hiring the right people. There's nothing like a bad hire.
Oh, yes. And if you have a bad hire, you got to know when to eliminate that bad hire immediately.
Yeah.
Because it's like a cancer that will fester.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's something I had to learn very early on in my career,
mm-hmm.
Is that if you make a mistake, you admit it, you move on, and you get rid of it.
Yeah. And it has nothing to do with, you know, the person being terrible, wrong fit.
Right.
Wrong job.
Right.
Right. And
right.
so even for them, they're probably miserable because they're going, oh, my God, what am I doing here?
Right.
And you're going, oh,
right.
my God, what are you doing? So
right. Right. Right.
in that type of relationship,
right.
the sooner you can assess and make the decision, the better off you are. The other piece I heard you say is gaining commitment and quickly assessing the existing staff.
Correct.
So it's not just about who you hire,
right.
but knowing the talent that you have.
Right.
And then I saw you moving people into their, I almost said gifts, I'll say talents on this
right.
component,
right. Right.
but having people operate in their best talent. How did you do that?
Well, first of all, you know, you go and you sit down and you talk with people. I mean,
yeah.
at the heart of what I do, I mean, yes, I'm a CEO. Yes, I'm an executive. But at the heart of who I am, I'm a pastor.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to go and sit down and talk to people. I want to get to know who they are. I want to know as much as they're willing to share with me. And then, too, I want to ask them, what do you want to do? You know, where are your passions? You know,
yeah.
Where do you want to exercise, you know, your talents? And when you really sit down with people, there's some people who are extremely gifted but have just never been given the opportunity.
Mm.
And for me, those are individuals that I really want to hire because they have the passion.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, when I hire individuals, I hire people based upon passion.
Okay.
I could really care less, you know, what degrees you have. I mean, I got three.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, degrees don't mean anything. It just means that you were able to do the work at that particular time.
Right.
It does not mean that you're fit for this particular business.
Yeah.
And so when I talk to people and I try to find out what their passions are, I am willing to take a risk on someone who is extremely passionate, who has a strong work ethic, who mm-hmm. comes in early, who will go, who will leave the office late because they're committed to the institution. When you find someone like that, that's a gem. That's somebody that you just cannot, you can't go to Harvard and get that. You can't go to Yale or Columbia. That's somebody who has a particular kind of drive.
Mm-hmm.
And so you look for people like that. And so for me, we had a lot of people like that. I mean, people have been there for a long time at OIC, but just had been in one particular place. So we did shuffle the deck a little bit and
mm-hmm.
move some people around. And now I think the turnaround that we have experienced, I mean, we had low 60s as far as job placement
mm-hmm.
this past year, this past cycle rather. Our job placement rate went up to 83%. That
yeah.
is unheard of. So when you're talking about helping people really help themselves, I mean, it's great to have the organization, but you have to have the right people in the right places so they can make the contacts with the business community and be able to advocate for our students to help them get into the positions for jobs. And I'll share this with you. I know you have other questions. One of the greatest feelings for me is to go to R2L a couple weeks ago, and one of our students is one of the sous chefs there.
Wow.
And I was just so proud. I was like, she's a student at OIC, but here she is working at R2L. And if you've ever been to R2L, you know it's overlooking the city.
Absolutely.
And
beautiful.
For me, it's so many metaphors that are there. Here it is, this student who came to OIC who may have never known that there was an R2L now is working there and is overlooking the city because of an opportunity she was given at Philadelphia OIC.
So those are just the beginning of the stories. I have attended graduations and
yes.
the recent luncheon where she is the first African American woman to be the head chef
yes.
at one of the restaurants in the city as
yes.
a graduate of OIC. So measurable outcomes, people. This is not, you
That's
know,
it.
He's a pastor and he just loves on everybody and he's so excited and oh my goodness. Yes, the pastoral component around getting to know people and know
right.
and identify, you know, where are you best suited is critical. But that is not unique to only being the pastor. He's doing it as the pastor and the president.
Right.
And
right.
so if you're leading people, the advice that I hear you giving is you have to talk and get in touch and then assess and identify where do people belong. Because when they're in the right place, you can go from 60-something percent in terms
right.
of job placement to 83. So you do realize that's like over a 50% leap. That's just about, you know, from my world, I just thought about that. I'm like, he literally has increased the almost 50%. It's like 43% in
yeah.
graduation and in job placement.
Job placement.
In yeah. 2 years.
Yeah.
So the right fit gets you the right results. The other piece that I heard you say in terms of leading at OIC, that it, after the internal
mm-hmm.
workings
right.
were refined,
right.
that the vision was casted outside of the building.
Correct.
Into the community. So share more about that.
And we have to let everybody know that Philadelphia OIC is alive. I mean,
yeah.
a lot of people, they felt that OIC was dormant. You know, was it really, you know, I guess you can say relevant.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it's always been relevant. It's kind of like finding a piece of jewelry or some type of furniture
mm.
that has just been kind of stayed and sitting there. And then when you polish it off, you're like, oh my God, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
That's the way I felt about Philadelphia OIC. So I just needed some brushing off and to let it shine again. And so we kicked off last year in 2016, our luncheon that we call Innovate, Ignite, mm-hmm. and Imagine. And that particular luncheon has really done tremendously. The first year we raised $250,000. This year we did $300,000
mm-hmm.
For this luncheon, over $300,000. So I'm very excited. Last year we had about 14 sponsors. This year we had 33 sponsors.
Wow.
And so again, we have really grown tremendously because people they want to be a part of something that is great. And I remember backstage, David Cohen came up to me and he said, this is fabulous. He said, you have really brought or I see back. And I say, people will say that to me often, and I tell them, no, my team and I have helped to bring OIC back. Because, you know, you can, again, have a vision, but if you don't have the right people around, it's just not going to happen. But I'm excited. And there's a little tagline, a hashtag. If you go to social media, if you go onto Twitter or Facebook or whatever, and if you do the hashtag Imagine OIC, you'll see pictures, you'll see what we're doing, you'll see how we're impacting lives. And that's really our mission. It's not only to help people to reimagine OIC, but also to help people to reimagine their own lives.
And so you've done that. So the three I's again from the luncheon: innovate, ignite,
and imagine.
How could I miss imagine? How could I miss imagine? So you, again, I'm a numbers person, so I'm listening to you say you had 14 sponsors
yes.
last year. You went to 33
sponsors.
That's 100% increase.
Correct.
In a year.
Correct.
What got 15 other people? Because it's one thing to say, oh, it's greatness and people right. want to be attached. No. That's
right.
money.
Right.
So
yes.
it wasn't 15 other people that said, here's $15. That's 15 other organizations
right.
saying, I want to invest.
Yeah.
What drove that investment?
So a few things. So when people understand the nonprofit world, it's a business.
Yeah.
You know, I know people don't like to use that language, but it is.
Mm-hmm.
And as I tell my team, as altruistic as we want to be, as benevolent as we want to be, at the end of the day, we're measured and we're scored based upon what is the return on the investment.
Mm-hmm.
And so for us, we had to increase our job placement numbers. We had to increase our graduation numbers, because when that turnaround came, then I could go out and tell the story. I could go out and sell this to the business community. I can go out and get more money, because people see if I invest in this organization, it's a good investment, and then there's a great return. And also what we start to do is listen to the students. Many of them, they have great stories. They have overcome many challenges.
Yeah.
And so when you begin to put the numbers together, which are going in a positive direction, and then from a PR standpoint, you start to grab the stories that are going to touch people and say, look, I want to help that student.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I want to help that individual. There's one person who I think about right now who is in a homeless shelter, who would come to OIC faithfully, and now she has a job and she's able to provide for her family.
Wow.
I think about another young man who was in prison, who had been in and out of prison several times since he was a juvenile, and came to Philadelphia OIC, got a good paying job,
yeah.
and how his life was turned around. I think about another young woman who spoke at the luncheon this past year, Sabrina. She talked about how she was a stay-at-home mom, how her daughter had special needs, and how she felt like she could not leave her daughter because she had to take care of her.
Yeah.
But in the process, she lost herself. She lost her own confidence. But how, when she came to OIC, mm-hmm. in her own words at the luncheon, she said, I now have a testimony, and OIC has helped me get my voice back. So those are the stories that we like to share with people, and how people have overcome. We also point out the Crystal Bryants who had Sinesta, who you were
yes,
talking about.
Yes.
We'd like to point out the Tanya Marantz, who went through our program, who is now working at the Western Hotel in their executive leadership team. There are so many people who have come through Philadelphia OIC. And so we had to start telling that story even better, and making sure we did it through social media. We did it through the press, so that people know the great things that are happening at Philadelphia OIC.
So the turnaround didn't just happen because you asked it to turn around.
No, it's a lot of work.
And with defined actions,
right?
Clarity on when to move, how to move, and more importantly, Dr. Johnson kept referencing the team.
Right.
He did not move on his own. He and the team moved in tandem.
Right.
To get it done.
Yeah.
And the board. And all of those things make a difference. You can't
right.
achieve the outcomes. You can't achieve the goals
right.
if everybody is off doing their own thing, or this is the way I want to have it. You know, I want to do my part.
Right.
One of the pieces I love out of the movie Drumline is it says one band, one sound.
That's it.
Right.
That's
and so
it.
To get people to understand you are a piece in the band.
That's
you
right.
are not the band.
That's right.
right. And so when you are working together, we can make beautiful music.
Yes.
Otherwise, you're just destroying what
right.
we're trying to orchestrate. Listening to what Dr. Johnson has unfolded about turning it around, I need our listeners, whether they're leaders, Dr. Johnson, entrepreneurs, or even as they are thinking about their own life, What advice would you offer them in order to take the first step in the turnaround?
I would say if you're going to turn around either yourself or you're going to turn around a business, the first thing that you have to do is to really believe in yourself. Nothing will turn around if you don't believe that you can do it. And, you know, I haven't shared the story a lot, but I'll share it now. When I arrived at OIC, as any CEO would do, the first thing that you want to know is, what are the numbers? Bring out the financial reports.
Yeah.
Let me see the statement of activities, the P&L, you know,
right.
Statement of financial position. And at the time, we could not produce it, which was problematic because that's a report that, you know, your finance team should be able to produce.
Yes.
So I said, okay, no worries. Brought in someone to do a financial audit for us to be. We were being audited, so I want anybody to think we were not being audited, but we needed to bring in someone to do a kind of a forensic for me, just kind of let me know what are the issues here.
Mm.
And when I brought in Karen Jackson, who was our new CFO, she came back with her report, and we began to build out what needed to happen. I share that with you because when I asked for the financials, I couldn't get them. I asked for the team to bring me the bank statements because bank statements don't lie.
Mm-hmm.
We only had one account that was positive, two others that were negative. And I jokingly say,
wow.
You know, I said to myself, wow, you know, I just said yes to a job I just started, and I don't even know if I'm going to get paid.
It really is a nonprofit, right? You're a volunteer.
Yeah.
Volunteer CEO.
Exactly. But what I began to see is that we were, because we had such a big heart, we were not collecting some of the grants that we need to receive the way in which we need to do so. Our tenants in the building, we had not collected some of their rents. And so you begin to find out where the holes are. It wasn't that there was not any money that was should be receiving. It was just we had not done the proper part in collecting. And so once you change that whole model and you begin to run it like a business, then you can get to the black, and
yeah.
Then you can begin to have a more positive outcome. So the turnaround for me really begins. I believe that I could do it. And I told my team, I said, I understand where we are financially.
Mm-hmm.
I said, but I am going to be the captain on this ship, and I will make sure that you all are okay and I can do without because I believe in this organization. And so when you approach it from that mindset and you believe that you can do it, What I found is that my team, they started to galvanize around me because they didn't want me trying to row on the boat by myself.
Right.
They begin to pick up paddles and they begin to help move this boat, move this ship. And when that happens, it builds character in the team. It builds character in the organization. And then lo and behold, you realize, look, y'all are cruising now.
Right.
And so I'm excited about where we are, but I'm also excited about our future.
So you talked about believing in yourself in addition to having actionable steps that you're going to take. So dig in. So don't just believe, but, you know, believe, okay, I have the skill sets. I'm capable. I'm competent.
Right.
All right. I'm there.
Right. And then once you get beyond that, then it is laying out the game plan. How am I going to get there?
Right.
And so as I share with people, you have to believe in yourself. And then two, you begin to map out, you know, what is your 30-day plan? What is your 60-day plan? What is your 90-day plan?
Right.
What is your 360-day plan?
Mm-hmm.
Then you map out where do you want to be in the next 2 years? Where do you want to be in the next 3 to 5 years? So for me, I knew that we had to expand our programs at OIC because we only had one workforce program, and that was in hospitality.
Right.
So I began to look at what were the other workforce programs that are out there in this particular region
mm-hmm.
that could be helpful to the constituents that we serve. And so we began to look at construction, energy, and other jobs, and coding, and technology. And so now I'm proud to say that OIC is going to be kicking off. We're going to have a big press conference coming up on June 8th with Council President Darrell Clark and others from BankWorks and Wells Fargo and Citizens Bank. But we're kicking off this new banking program called BankWorks
mm-hmm.
in which people are going to be trained to become tellers as well as personal bankers. This is huge because you only have to have a high school diploma or a GED to get involved in this program, and you'll make around $36,000, maybe even up to, you know, $40,000 or so.
Absolutely.
And you can start off as a teller. What's great about banking, it's almost like the military, and you can work your way up.
Don't I know it?
Yes. That's right. I'm talking to somebody who understands. And you can become a branch manager or like Michelle Lawrence, an area president.
Yeah.
But it's possible. And really, in my opinion, banking – you limit yourself.
Right.
And so, therefore, if you want to get to the next level, you can, because there are always going to be opportunities there. So in addition to banking, we're also going to have a pre-construction program, which we'll share more in the coming weeks. But two, we are working on now an energy lineman, line woman program with PICO that should launch later this fall. And people may not know, but linemen, the people who are on the poles, line women, they make a base salary of around $80,000. They can make up to around $200,000 through overtime because the more storms there are, the more work that they have. But their base salary is around $80,000. The average salary for a person who works in the line industry for energy is around $125,000.
So if I were to listen to what you just described, you talked about people, process, and partners.
Correct.
Those things made the difference. And because you had measurable outcomes, you know, we talked about a little bit earlier as to how did you get from 14 to 33. Now it's evident.
Yes.
It's not just being a part of something great. It is seeing that I can participate in multiple ways.
Correct.
It's not just writing a check. There are other avenues for me to benefit. So what's the return on my investment?
Right.
The return isn't, oh, you just helped so many people get a job.
Right.
It's I can give you people.
Yes.
To work for you.
Yes.
And that exchange is rare. But that's what I'm hearing with the bank works and the PICO opportunities right. and the landlines is that companies are now not just giving and writing a check. They are vested. They're vested with, so I've seen what you've done here.
Right.
Can you do that with
right.
this?
Right.
And so listeners, we talked about how do you create value.
Right.
That's what OIC has done. Mm-hmm. It has expanded from
Correct.
Hospitality
right.
into other arenas where they have proven their excellence and where they started. And now other organizations are going, well, if you can do it over there.
Right.
Can you do it over here?
Right. And that's the big thing right there is that, you know, it is biblical in the sense that, you know, the Bible talks about be faithful over a few things
yeah.
and then you'll become ruler over many. And for me, I felt like we've been faithful over hospitality and the different opportunities. One big one, which I really want to announce, that is in a form of a school, but I can't announce it just yet. but we're very excited about it. But if that comes through, again, there are these different building blocks. And what mm-hmm. we're building out at OIC is a 10-year model where we start with those who are middle school because we have programs at Ethel Allen as well as at H.A. Brown, working with young people, helping them pass the PSSAs, and also exposing them to technology and healthy food, et cetera. And then if we are successful with this next piece, we will have a school. The third piece is our vocational school, which everybody knows about primarily is hospitality. But with bank works and energy programs and technology programs, that will expand. And then we have relationships with the colleges. We have articulation agreements with City College. We have articulation agreements with Community College. So, again, there are a plethora of opportunities. And so once you get involved in OIC, we will be with you until you graduate. And if anybody wants to be involved in Philadelphia OIC, wants to help, you want to partner, just call us at 215-236-7700. Our website is philaoic.org. And you can also reach out to Kristen Landtroop. Kristen is our Vice President of Development and Strategic Partnerships. If you're a business, if you want to work with us to help take our organization to the next level.
Thank you for sharing that. And you need to get involved with OIC. It is certainly, as you have heard, making an impact in our fair city. And I believe it's going to go even beyond. As we close out this segment, but not closing you
right,
out,
right, right.
What nuggets would you leave our listeners today?
I would tell them to dream and pursue your passions. And what you want to do more than anything, what drives me with the work that I do at Philadelphia OIC is, am I making a difference in somebody's life? And so for me, that is what wakes me up in the morning is I know that we're making a difference. I know we have an impact upon lives.
Yeah.
I know that people are getting jobs. And as long as I am able to keep doing that, then I want to keep doing this job.
Hmm. So the work that you've done will speak for you, and your living won't be in vain, right?
Amen.
We have just heard from Dr. Johnson, the president of OIC. I need you to stay tuned in, because he is one man with two hats. And so as we return, we're going to hear from Pastor Johnson of Dare to Imagine.
Let me switch my hats here.
He doesn't change outfits, y'all. Just hats, just rolls. This is Michelle Speaks on 860 AM. We'll be back after the break. Stay tuned in.
This Wednesday, 1 p.m., drop everything that you're doing and tune in right here, the heart of the city, with me, Malik Boyd. This is a no-holds-barred show. Real issues, real discussions, real solutions. And with some great guests, hot topics, and some surprises mixed in, I promise you this will be a show you don't want to miss. The Heart of the City with me, Malik Boyd, Wednesday, 1 p.m., right here on 860.
My friends, this is Joe Krause. You've heard me on Philadelphia Radio now for over 20 years, and you know I don't often endorse products or people unless they are real game changers. I want to tell you about Weinerman Pain and Wellness, located in Center City, Philadelphia. And at the end of this short personal endorsement, I want you to consider Weinerman Pain and Wellness. If you are recovering from an injury, if you or a family member has been diagnosed with a disorder that has stopped you in your tracks, or if you're like me, determined to learn about wellness while getting yourself prepared to stay healthy so you can enjoy the blessings of your family. Remember the name of this warm and caring location, Weinerman Pain and Wellness. Why should you consider Weinerman Pain and Wellness? Because they are who you expect them to be. Weinerman Pain and Wellness, on the web at WeinermanPainandWellness.com.
Weinerman Pain and Wellness, located at 100 South Broad Street, just south of City Hall. Call Weinerman Pain and Wellness at 215-988-9503. That's 215-988-9503. Call today. Today's broadcast is brought to you by the Philly Labor RX Injured Workers Pharmacy Network, featuring PPC Pharmacy, First Choice Pharmacy, and Precision Scripts, providing injured workers with premium products and services from the point of injury through the entire healing process. The Philly Labor RX Pharmacy Network cares about injured workers.
Take a look under your bed. Find stuff under there? What about jobs? No? Now try your basement. There's a pair of overalls that, overall, you're not so into anymore. A perfectly good laptop that hasn't seen your lap in months. And even more stuff. But still no jobs? Well, you really have both. See, stuff is defined as household articles considered as a group. Sometimes this stuff is no longer needed. Wait, no longer needed? That can't be right. Because remember those jobs you were looking for? Those are really needed. And they're the stuff inside your stuff. Even inside that winter coat that moved with you to Phoenix. Our job is to unlock those jobs. And it starts when you donate your stuff to your local Goodwill. Here's how we do it. When you donate to Goodwill, we sell your stuff to provide job training for people right here in your community. So just by teaming up with Goodwill, you help create jobs. And isn't that worth parting with the leftover keytar from your 80s cover band? Goodwill. Donate stuff. Create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. A message from Goodwill and the Ad Council.
In May of 2000, Devo Karnakar skied the full descent of Mount Everest. Every day, somewhere in the world, someone base jumps off a bridge, an antenna, a building, or a mountain peak. At Mavericks, surfers brave 60-foot faces and a punishing rock bottom to ride the world's largest waves. Across suburbia, skateboarders transform curves, stairs, swimming pools, and cement flood basins into Everests of their own making. In the old days, we called these people adventurers. Now, we call them extreme sports enthusiasts. There's a group of people who jump out of helicopters into 30-foot ocean swells, race vehicles through war zones, chase hurricanes, fly through walls of fire, and maneuver zodiacs through flash floods, all in an effort to save lives. We call these people the Air Force Reserve. The Air Force Reserve. Live the extreme.
Introducing the YMCA. What, you already know the why? Or so you think. Sure, you know the why for a swim, a workout, even a game of hoops. But did you know we're more than that? We're a cause. When you take your jump shot at the Y, someone else is getting job training. Take a cardio class while kids are in an after-school enrichment program. Practice your downward-facing dog as a teen practices her leadership skills. That's the why. We work with people no matter their age, income, or background, and give them the opportunity to learn, grow, and thrive, all with one simple goal in mind, to strengthen our community. And we've got so much more that does just that. So while you might think of the Y as that place for lifting weights, we're also about lifting entire communities. Introducing the Y. We're so much more than a place. We're a cause. Visit ymca.net/more.
We are back with Dr. Kevin R. Johnson. If you missed the first half, he was talking about what the turnaround looked like at OIC. And he mentioned how important it was to come in and have a supportive board, honoring even Atif Bostic, who is the chair of the board, and then talked about I'll call him Four. My partner is laughing because eventually things evolve to Fours these days. But he started with people and the culture he created with hiring new people and the existing team. And the important pieces of listening to them, share their ideas, what's important to them, and then meeting what's in it for them. The second piece was around process. You know, Stephen Covey says always begin with the end in mind, right? And so you cannot get forward if there's not a process, one that's built in with sustainability and inclusion and having all of the right tools in place. He followed that with partners. So after he took care of the things that were inside of the building, that expansion into the community and getting corporate partners involved to support the vision, allow for expansion. And the last P I didn't even get to talk about because we were trying to get to the break. But did you hear the pipeline he's creating? Kids in high school are, you know, there's a partnership there so that they have the ability to transition from one step to the next step to the next step to the vocational to the what can't be disclosed to the partnerships with college, local colleges. All of those things are happening in the turnaround at OIC. And so hats off to the president of OIC, who is one and the same as we begin to dig in to what's near and dear to my heart. And that is the pastor of Dare to Imagine. And you are coming off of the closing,
yes,
of the Dare to Imagine campus, as we are dubbing it. Share in similar fashion, because mm-hmm. That's a turnaround, right?
Yes.
That's a turnaround. Share what steps were taken to go from the living room. Wait, we have it, right? It was the living room
to the ballroom,
and from square feet to acres. Right? That's how we sum it up.
Right.
What was put in place for that transition?
Mm-hmm. I would say that, you know, I've always known God was going to do something great.
Yeah.
I just did not know what that was going to be. And, you know, I started preaching when I was 16 years old. Have always been connected to God, always loved the Lord, always been in church, and wanted to prepare myself to become the best pastor that I could become. And that led me from being born in Dallas to being reared and going to public schools in Austin, Texas, to going to Morehouse College, where I was exposed to not only the best of preaching, but the best of ministry. And one particular ministry that really impacted me, in addition to my home church and my home pastor, Reverend Joseph Parker Jr., it was the Abyssinian Baptist Church in Harlem, New York. And I had to make a decision when I was graduating from Morehouse as to where I would go to seminary. I was accepted to three schools, Harvard, Princeton, and Union Theological Seminaries, with all full rides. But I wanted to go to New York to learn under Reverend Butts.
Yeah.
So therefore, that meant that I had to go to Abyssinian Baptist Church. And my aunt thought I was crazy. She was like, "You're not going to go to Harvard. They're going to give you a full ride." I was like, "You know, Auntie, I got to follow what God has told me to do." And that's what kind of really opened up my eyes to see urban ministry and learn how do you cut deals, to learn how you do real estate development. At the time that I was there, I mean, Dr. Butts, they were opening the first grocery store in Harlem. They had built the first high school in 50 years in Harlem. They had a homeless shelter across the street from the church. And many of us don't want a homeless shelter even in our neighborhood. But the
right.
church had a homeless shelter across the street. They were had a Head Start program. I mean, you name it, they had everything. And so for me, I really learned and was like a sponge being around Reverend Butts on how you kind of do this urban ministry.
So if you would pause for just a yes. second right there, because that
yes.
is not common. We don't normally hear,
right.
you know, those kind of discussions. In fact, they want, you know, the church to be over
right.
there and business to be way
right.
over here. But yet what I hear you saying very clearly is they're not separate and apart. This is not, you know,
right.
the state and the church as if we don't
right.
do business. We should be in the business of doing business.
Yeah. I mean, I would see people like Dick Parsons coming to Abyssinian Baptist Church because they want to do business.
Yeah.
I would see people like Ken Chenault of American Express coming to Abyssinian because they want to do business.
Mm-hmm.
I would see fashion designers like Leon Talley, who would become Cosmopolitan Magazine, who would be coming to Abyssinian because they want to do business. And so for me, to sit there as a sponge and to
yeah.
learn this is how you kind of do it, that was an education I couldn't get at Morehouse. That was an education I couldn't get at Union or Columbia University, but it was an education I got in the church.
Mm.
And we just came back from the National African American Museum of History and Culture in D.C. And the church itself, that's what we used to be.
Yeah.
We used to be not just the church, but we were the businesses. We were the business that gave birth to businesses in the community. And so when you think about Henry Boyd, who had Boyd Publishing, and he just didn't have Boyd Publishing. As I learned when I was in D.C. this past Monday, he had clothing. He had other things that were taking place, but all of it was given birth out of the church. And it was to help and to empower, because we have to remember the church was really the only place where you could go that could actually help you, give you your seed money.
Right.
You know, so that you could actually start your business. And so the pastor had all the relationships, so that kind of put you in contact with different individuals. So for me, it's for I'm returning back to our roots and how we started out as a church. What has happened in the church, which is so sad, is that the pastors have made it more about themselves than about the community. And so I think that what has really kind of happened is that, at least for me, I'm trying to be true. It's not that I'm perfect. You know, I'm just as flawed as anybody else. But really everything that I do is with the people in mind, because I really want to make sure, that we help God's people as much as possible.
And so with that, you know, you took us through the aspect of about business, and that dropped you here in Philadelphia,
yeah.
and you had a stint at Bright Hope, and then you had, you know, this vision around
right.
Dare to Imagine.
Yeah, and that vision really began long before coming here to Philly. It really began,
wow.
I probably would say, as early as when I was in Austin, Texas. And that was to, I think I wrote the first grant proposal to help my church do a whole community redevelopment program. And I grew up just a block or so away from the church, and I had come across this grant opportunity in Austin and told my pastor about it, and they created this neighborhood program. And then when I went to Cleveland, Ohio, and worked with Dr. Moss, I wrote a grant that got us $500,000 to get a health education program, and went to Abyssinian, you know, did the same thing. And so for me, I have been really on this mission to really help people become their best selves. And for me, it's very personal because my home pastor, Reverend Parker, came into my life because I didn't know anything about college. Nobody in my family had graduated from college. And so people kind of look at me and say, oh, you know, he's comes from a very good background. No, that's not the case. We got as much drama as your family got drama.
Right.
But Reverend Parker came in and exposed me to a world that I did not know existed. They lived in the house in the hills. They drove nice cars, but they were always rooted. They would come over to our house and eat, you know, beans and rice and, you know,
right.
Get some peach cobbler, you name it. But it was great. And so that really kind of exposed me. It really started to help me dare to imagine and realize there was a different world out there. And then as it kind of fast forward into the church, to when I was at Bright Hope, we had a capital campaign that I started. I knew I wanted the word imagine to be involved. And I had gone home to Austin to see my grandparents and my mom. And I went to my old middle school called Keelan Junior High School.
Mm-hmm.
And on the side of the building was our school motto, Dare to Excel. And I was like, that's it. Our capital campaign is going to be Dare to Imagine. So I took it back. You know, we kicked off this Dare to Imagine capital campaign. And if you do a Google search on Dare to Imagine, at some point you're going to go back to Bright Hope. There's something still, you know, out there in the atmosphere. And when God, you know, placed upon my heart, to start, this church, you know, after leaving Bright Hope, he just kept saying, you know, Dare to Imagine. And so here we are, Dare to Imagine Church, and we're creating the Dare to Imagine movement. And our mission is to connect people to Jesus Christ, empowering them to dare to imagine and live a better life.
And so let's talk about the campus.
Yes. Yes.
You know, 6.8 acres. It has a school. It's been important as you were looking for locations to be in a position to give back to the community. Mm-hmm. What does this campus offer now, and what do you see Dare to Imagine doing in the community?
One, that campus, which, and I want to thank the Archdiocese of Philadelphia and Father Grogan from Holy Cross Parish for selecting us, but that campus has really been there for the community, and we're going to continue that tradition. We look at moving or expand, as I like to say, to Northwest Philadelphia, is that it just gives us a greater opportunity to help people grow. And one of the strategic decisions that we made and even kind of branding the new campus is that we dropped the name church.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not because we're not a church. We are a church. We're based on the Bible. We believe in Jesus Christ. I mean,
absolutely,
all of that. But to say Dare to Imagine Church locates you to a particular building or a particular place. But just to say Dare to Imagine, it means that there are no limits. And so when you look at our sign that is now at the corner of Ardley and Upsall and Upsall and Anderson, it just says Dare to Imagine, and it has our little logo with the cross inside the light bulb. And even when we put together our branding, many people say the light bulb. Well, yes, it's a light bulb, but like any light bulb, it's just a light bulb unless you have what's needed on the inside to make it lighten up. And so for us, if you have the cross,
right,
if you have Jesus Christ, then Jesus Christ will help you lighten up and be bright, so that you can give light to everything that comes in contact with you. So really what we're hoping to do there at that campus is to continue to be the other lights that are there, other churches that are there, and we thank God for them. We just want to help add to more light to that section of the city. Because up there, you know, that part of Philadelphia is really on the hill. And it's our prayer that our light, along with the other lights that are there, will start to brighten up that place so that all will look here at Philadelphia and say there are some people who are really on fire for God.
So I'm excited about where the church, the campus is located and the mission that's associated with it. And even today, this morning, someone got out and started taking pictures, and the question was asked, are you a member? And the gentleman said, no, I'm not a member. And we said, well, why are you taking pictures? He said, because I'm trying to figure out what is Dare to Imagine.
I love it.
What is Dare to Imagine?
Right.
And so before we got to the 6.8, there was a journey.
Oh, yes, Lord.
There was a journey. And we're going to have to, you know, give it quickly.
Right.
But the same turnaround, right? Because,
right,
you know, the journey didn't start with 6.8 St. Therese. The journey started all out there on by Island Avenue. So talk about what you did in the meantime, because there were opportunities where it felt like it could have been stop and go. But eventually it turned around.
And so, again, this gets back to vision. You know, I know my strongest gift is I'm a visionary. And so I really spent some time thinking about, you know, okay, God, if you want me to do this, then God, I'm a planner, so I have to think out everything. And so as I sat there and started thinking and started praying and laid it out, then I brought the 20-something people, you know, who came to the house on November 30th, 2014, and shared the vision with them. And as I often tell young pastors, because they would ask me the question, you know, Kev, you know, how is it that you were able to do this, you know, in 2 years, 5 months? And I'd tell them, I said, listen, you know, you can have a vision, but if God does not confirm the vision through the people, then all you have is idea.
Yes.
And so for me,
yes,
I had the vision. shared it, the people confirmed it, and when the people confirmed it, I said, okay, let's go ahead and move forward. Because when you're planting a church, it's a lot of movement. I mean, we had one service on December 28th, our very first service, 2014,
yeah,
at someone's house. Then they said we couldn't be there at the house anymore. We had to go find a place. And I want to give a big shout out to Bishop Ingram, mm-hmm, and First District Plaza, because where you actually decide to plant, yeah, and to grow is very critical, because you can either be on great soil or you can be on not so great soil.
Mm.
And so one of the things that the church plant movement teaches you is that you have to have a location where there's parking, great facilities, all of that, because people are judging you based upon the initial decisions that you made.
Mm-hmm.
And so for us to have a facility like First District Plaza that had underground parking,
mm-hmm,
relatively a nice facility,
yes,
had elevators for handicap accessible,
yeah,
they had all of the amenities that you would need to kind of get started. And, of course, the price point, you know, worked well for us.
Absolutely.
And so that was a place where we were able to grow. And it's kind of like when you plant, you know, a seed. That's where we were. But then once the plant finally grows, it kind of grows out of the pot, and either the plant will just stay that size or you have to replant it.
Yeah.
And that's all we did. We're replanting Dare to Imagine in Northwest Philadelphia.
So that indeed, and the growth continues. There are three things in particular that you, well, one, there's a culture of love. That's,
yes,
that's,
yes,
evident.
Yeah.
And you make that a mandate.
Yes.
That from, everything is experiential. So from the time they approach the parking lot,
yeah,
it's what do they see and what do they feel?
Yeah. I often tell the team, I said, look, you know, when you go to Disney World, there's a certain feel, you know, so hospitality. So while at OIC, I'm on hospitality, at the church, I'm on hospitality too.
Yes.
And so there's an experience that we want you to have when you come to Dare to Imagine. We want you to say, I've never been to a church like that before.
Mm-hmm.
And really what we're really after is that we want you to say, I've never come in contact with God like that before.
Yeah.
And so culture is very important. So we're a very loving community. I tell people, and I'm very clear about this, is that if you think small, Dare to Imagine is not the community for you.
Mm.
Because we think big. We have tremendous faith. And what I really appreciate about God with this Dare to Imagine campus, it's really a testament of faith. Yes, we use the language of Dare to Imagine, but all Dare to Imagine is, in one word, is faith.
Yeah.
And so we really are saying to God, God, we trust you. God, we believe in you. And God, we're just expecting great things. And I firmly believe that when you have that type of faith, then you can say, as we say on Sunday mornings at the end of service, that we know that life is better when you dare to imagine.
Indeed. So I know that in the course of this, there was an institution that stepped up in a way.
Yes.
That I've been in banking for 28 years. And so, you know, nothing short of a miracle. If you want to quickly just,
right,
you know,
I will
acknowledge that.
I want to acknowledge and really thank God for Bryn Mawr Trust Bank, or Bryn Mawr Trust Company, Frank Leto, John Ellensworth, so many others, Joe and Wayne, who are over there. They believed in us, believed in our vision. But I will say, I also thank God for the congregation and for our friends and for the churches who planted and Dare to Imagine. We had to have at least $500,000. The acquisition of this property was $2.2 million. And we had $150,000. And in 30 days, we raised $350,000. And Bryn Mawr Trust, they were really moved. And they said, wow,
yeah,
we're going to take a risk on this church, even though we had less than 3 years of financials. And I think that's really a testament to Bryn Mawr Trust.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also a testament of the movement and what the Lord is doing.
So it sounds like there is very little difference between what you expect in one place versus what you expect in another. The people, the planning, the process, the research, the culture,
yes,
all a part of being president and pastor. It has been my pleasure to have Dr. Kevin R. Johnston in the studio with me today. I look forward to being with you again next week. Till such time, be blessed.